Chapter 70. Sulaco outstripped Nostromo's prudence, growing rich swiftly on the hidden treasures of the earth, hovered over by the anxious spirits of good and evil, torn out by the laboring hands of the people. It was like a second youth, like a new life, full of promise, of unrest, of toil, scattering lavishly its wealth to the four corners of an excited world. Material changes swept along in the train of material interests. And other changes more subtle, outwardly unmarked, affected the minds and hearts of the workers. Captain Mitchell had gone home to live on his savings invested in the Santome mine, and Dr. Monaghan had grown older, with his head steel gray and the unchanged expression of his face, living on the inexhaustible treasure of his devotion drawn upon in the secret of his heart like a store of unlawful wealth. The Inspector General of State Hospitals, whose maintenance is a charge upon the Gould Concession, Official Advisor on Sanitation to the Municipality, Chief Medical Officer of the Santome Consolidated Mines, whose territory, containing gold, silver, copper, lead, cobalt, extends 4 miles along the foothills of the Cordillera, had felt poverty-stricken, miserable, and starved during the prolonged second visit the Goulds paid to Europe and the United States of America. Intimate of the Casa, proved friend, a bachelor without ties, and without establishment except of the professional sort, he had been asked to take up his quarters in the Gould house. In the 11 months of their absence, the familiar rooms, recalling at every glance the woman to whom he had given all his loyalty, had grown intolerable. As the day approached for the arrival of the mail boat Hermes, the latest addition to the O.S.N. Company's splendid fleet, the doctor hobbled about more vivaciously, snapped more sardonically at Simple, and Gentle out of sheer nervousness. He packed up his modest trunk with speed, with fury, with enthusiasm, and saw it carried out past the old porter at the gate of the Casa Gould with delight, with intoxication. Then, as the hour approached, sitting alone in the great landa behind the white mules, a little sideways, his drawn-in face positively venomous with the effort of self-control, and holding a pair of new gloves in his left hand, he drove to the harbor. His heart dilated within him so, when he saw the Goulds on the deck of the Hermes, that his greetings were reduced to a casual mutter. Driving back to town, all three were silent. And in the patio the doctor, in a more natural manner, said, "I'll leave you now to yourselves. I'll call tomorrow if I may. Come to lunch, dear Dr. Monaghan, and come early," said Mrs. Gould, in her traveling dress and her veil down, turning to look at him at the foot of the stairs, while at the top of the flight the Madonna, in blue robes and the child on her arm, seemed to welcome her with an aspect of pitying tenderness. "Don't expect to find me at home," Charles Gould warned him. "I'll be off early to the mine." After lunch, Dona Emilia and the senior doctor came slowly through the inner gateway of the patio. The large gardens of the Casa Gould, surrounded by high walls, and the red tile slopes of neighboring roofs, lay open before them, with masses of shade under the trees and level surfaces of sunlight upon the lawns. A triple row of old orange trees surrounded the whole. Barefooted, brown gardeners, in snowy white shirts and wide calzoneras, dotted the grounds, squatting over flowerbeds, passing between the trees, dragging slender India rubber tubes across the gravel of the paths, and the fine jets of water crossed each other in graceful curves, sparkling in the sunshine with a slight pattering noise upon the bushes, and an effect of showered diamonds upon the grass. Dona Emilia, holding up the train of a clear dress, walked by the side of Dr. Monaghan, in a longish black coat and severe black bow on an immaculate shirt front. Under a shady clump of trees, where stood scattered little tables and wicker easy chairs, Mrs. Gould sat down in a low and ample seat. "Don't go yet," she said to Dr. Monaghan, who was unable to tear himself away from the spot. his chin nestling within the points of his collar, he devoured her stealthily with his eyes, which, luckily, were round and hard like clouded marbles, and incapable of disclosing his sentiments. His pitying emotion at the marks of time upon the face of that woman, the air of frailty and weary fatigue that had settled upon the eyes and temples of the never-tired Sonora as Don Pepe years ago used to call her with admiration, touched him almost to tears. "Dee, don't go yet. Today is all my own," Mrs. Gould urged, gently. "We are not back yet officially. No one will come. It's only tomorrow that the windows of the Casa Gould are to be lit up for a reception." The doctor dropped into a chair. "Giving a tertulia?" he said, with a detached air. "A simple greeting for all the kind friends who care to come." "And only tomorrow?" "Yes. Charles would be tired out after a day at the mine, and so it would be good to have him to myself for one evening on our return to this house I love. It has seen all my life." "Ah, yes," snarled the doctor, suddenly. "Women count time from the marriage feast. Didn't you live a little before?" "Yes, but what is there to remember? There were no cares." Mrs. Gould sighed. "And as two friends, after a long separation, will revert to the most agitated period of their lives, they began to talk of the Sulaco Revolution. It seemed strange to Mrs. Gould that people who had taken part in it seemed to forget its memory and its lesson. And yet," struck in the doctor, "we who played our part in it had our reward. Don Peep, though superannuated, still can sit a horse. Berrios is drinking himself to death in jovial company away somewhere on his foundation beyond the Bolson de Tenoro. And the heroic Father Roman, I imagine the old Padre blowing up systematically the Santome mine, uttering a pious exclamation at every bang, and taking handfuls of snuff between the explosions. The heroic Padre Roman says that he is not afraid of the harm Holroyd's missionaries can do to his flock, as long as he is alive." Mrs. Gould shuddered a little at the allusion to the destruction that had come so near to the Santome mine. "Ah, but you, dear friend? I did the work I was fit for. You faced the most cruel dangers of all. Something more than death." "No, Mrs. Gould. Only death by hanging. And I am rewarded beyond my deserts." Noticing Mrs. Gould's gaze fixed upon him, he dropped his eyes. "I've made my career, as you see," said the Inspector General of State Hospitals, taking up lightly the lapels of his superfine black coat. The doctor's self-respect marked inwardly by the almost complete disappearance from his dreams of Father Bieran appeared visibly in what, by contrast with former carelessness, seemed an immoderate cult of personal appearance. Carried out within severe limits of form and color, and in perpetual freshness, this change of apparel gave to Dr. Monaghan an air at the same time professional and festive, while his gait and the unchanged crabbed character of his face acquired from it a startling force of incongruity. "Yes," he went on. "We all had our rewards. The engineer-in-chief, Captain Mitchell, we saw him," interrupted Mrs. Gould, in her charming voice. "The poor dear man came up from the country on purpose to call on us in our hotel in London. He comported himself with great dignity, but I fancy he regrets Sulaco. He rambled feebly about historical events till I felt I could have a cry." "H'M," grunted the doctor. "Getting old, I suppose. Even Nostromo is getting older, though he is not changed. And, speaking of that fellow, I wanted to tell you something." For some time the house had been full of murmurs, of agitation. Suddenly the two gardeners, busy with rose trees at the side of the garden arch, fell upon their knees with bowed heads on the passage of Antonia Avellanos, who appeared walking beside her uncle. Invested with the red hat after a short visit to Rome, where he had been invited by the propaganda, Father Corbelin, missionary to the wild Indians, conspirator, friend, and patron of Hernandez the robber, advanced with big, slow strides, gaunt and leaning forward, with his powerful hands clasped behind his back. The first Cardinal Archbishop of Sulaco had preserved his fanatical and morose air, the aspect of a chaplain of bandits. It was believed that his unexpected elevation to the purple was a counter move to the Protestant invasion of Sulaco organized by the Holard Missionary Fund. Antonia, the beauty of her face, as if a little blurred, her figure slightly fuller, advanced with her light walk and her high serenity, smiling from a distance at Mrs. Gould. As he had brought her uncle over to see dear Amelia, without ceremony, just for a moment before the siesta. When all were seated again, Dr. Monaghan, who had come to dislike heartily everybody who approached Mrs. Gould with any intimacy, kept aside, pretending to be lost in profound meditation. A louder phrase of Antonia made him lift his head. How can we abandon, groaning under oppression, those who have been our countrymen only a few years ago, who are our countrymen now? Miss Avellanos was saying. How can we remain blind and deaf without pity to the cruel wrongs suffered by our brothers? There is a remedy. Annex the rest of Costaguana to the order and prosperity of Sulaco, snapped the doctor. There is no other remedy. I am convinced, Senior Doctor, Antonia said, with the earnest calm of invincible resolution, that this was from the first poor Martin's intention. Yes, but the material interests will not let you jeopardize their development for a mere idea of pity and justice, the doctor muttered grumpily. And it is just as well, perhaps. The Cardinal Archbishop straightened up his gaunt bony frame. We have worked for them, we have made them, these material interests of the foreigners, the last of the Corbulans uttered in a deep, denunciatory tone. And without them you are nothing, cried the doctor from the distance. They will not let you. Let them beware, then, lest the people, prevented from their aspirations, should rise and claim their share of the wealth, and their share of the power, the popular Cardinal Archbishop of Sulaco declared, significantly, menacingly. A silence ensued, during which His Eminence stared, frowning at the ground, and Antonia, graceful and rigid in her chair, breathed calmly in the strength of her convictions. Then the conversation took a social turn, touching on the visit of the Goulds to Europe. The Cardinal Archbishop, when in Rome, had suffered from neuralgia in the head all the time. It was the climate, the bad air. When uncle and niece had gone away, with the servants again falling on their knees, and the old porter, who had known Henry Gould, almost totally blind and impotent now, creeping up to kiss His Eminence's extended hand, Dr. Monaghan, looking after them, pronounced the one word, incorrigible. Mrs. Gould, with a look upwards, dropped wearily on her lap her white hands flashing with the gold and stones of many rings. Conspiring. Yes, said the doctor. The last of the Avellanos and the last of the Corbulans are conspiring with the refugees from Sta. Marta that flock here after every revolution. The Café Lambroso at the corner of the plaza is full of them. You can hear their chatter across the street like the noise of a parrot house. They are conspiring for the invasion of Costaguana. And do you know where they go for strength, for the necessary force? To the secret societies amongst immigrants and natives, where Nostromo, I should say, Captain Fidanza is the great man. What gives him that position? Who can say? Genius? He has genius. He is greater with the populace than ever he was before. It is as if he had some secret power, some mysterious means to keep up his influence. He holds conferences with the Archbishop, as in those old days which you and I remember. Barrios is useless. But for a military head they have the pious Hernandez. And they may raise the country with the new cry of the wealth for the people. Will there be never any peace? Will there be no rest? Mrs. Gould whispered. I thought that we, no, interrupted the doctor. There is no peace, and no rest in the development of material interests. They have their law, and their justice. But it is founded on expediency, and is inhuman. It is without rectitude, without the continuity and the force, that can be found only in a moral principle. Mrs. Gould, the time approaches when all that the Gould concession stands for shall weigh as heavily upon the people as the barbarism, cruelty, and misrule of a few years back. How can you say that, Dr. Monaghan? She cried out, as if hurt in the most sensitive place of her soul. I can say what is true, the doctor insisted, obstinately. It'll weigh as heavily, and provoke resentment, bloodshed, and vengeance, because the men have grown different. Do you think that now the mine would march upon the town, to save their senior administrator? Do you think that? She pressed the backs of her entwined hands on her eyes, and murmured hopelessly, is it this we have worked for, then? The doctor lowered his head. He could follow her silent thought. Was it for this, that her life had been robbed of all the intimate felicities of daily affection which her tenderness needed as the human body needs air to breathe? And the doctor, indignant with Charles Gould's blindness, hastened to change the conversation. It is about Nostromo that I wanted to talk to you. Ah, that fellow has some continuity and force. Nothing will put an end to him. But never mind that. There's something inexplicable going on, or perhaps only too easy to explain. You know, Linda is practically the lighthouse keeper of the Great Isabel Light. The Garibaldino is too old now. His part is to clean the lamps, and to cook in the house, but he can't get up the stairs any longer. The black-eyed Linda sleeps all day, and watches the light all night. Not all day, though. She is up towards 5 in the afternoon, when our Nostromo, whenever he is in harbor with his schooner, comes out on his courting visit, pulling in a small boat. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.